Let's bring her up here so she can share with us. Again, another big hand for Jill Batson.
Okay, I'm off. Here we go. It's okay. You know, I've done this many times. Fiddle with the mic, there's. Okay. So I'm going to read a whole bunch of things, because I know some of you have never heard me read before. How could that have happened? I'm not really sure. But anyway, okay, so I'm going to read also some poems from the Requiem. It's called Dark Star Requiem, and it comes out, it's opening Luminato. You know, before Rufus, there will be Jill Batson, just so you know that. Okay, this is called Morgan's Bones. When Frank said, put something of you in the place, he plunged me into a rest of the day funk like I could never be that jazz loose and loose bone thing he is, the improv that jazz is all about. A conversation that moves across the stage, lightning moments between the instruments as the response is rethought, the voice that jazz speaks, tell me in that voice. When Frank plays his horn, it's like yesterday never happened or tomorrow doesn't need thinking about. The music is just there, his breath following the voice, his fingers squeezing the notes, melody he sees on his darkened retina, like nothing written and everything felt. When Frank says, always leave room to do what's in your heart, I feel squeezed like an exhalation of breath, like I cannot do what he does, even with my words. When Frank plays live, I'm hearing the breathy intake of air beneath music, the tack of saliva between tongue and reed, a cushioned tap of brass keys, his life's history in the metallic edge of methadone. I'm hearing a life lived, a man learning. I'm hearing Bird and Miles and Lewis in countless hotel rooms and back alleys, the weed urine aroma. When Frank says, I'm no good at taking care of myself, I remember Thelonious with his wife packing a cardboard suitcase and Frank's toffee skin, the reed-leaning bottom teeth. I know it's too late for me to live that life. When Frank's music envelops me in 7 a.m. rising light, the chamisa blooming in my breathing, I'm driving up through mountains, past the high road to Chimayo, carried away with the salty extravagance of sound, the smooth quality of knowing one's heart, remembrance of love lost and regained, a floating cushion of familiarity. And Frank's notes breathing across a landscape serene, the modulated security of distance. When Frank says, all I want to do is rehearse my craft, I understand the need for selfishness, the quality of genius. Thank you. That's when I lived in New Mexico, I hung out for a while with Frank Morgan. I don't know if many of you know who he is. He's he recently died. Was a great saxophonist, and I used to hang around with him quite a bit. And that was kind of a trip. Okay, so the Dark Star Requiem is an oratorio. It's with a 20 voice choir, the Alma Isley Singers, the Griffin Trio, who are a classical trio, and four solo voices, four opera singers. And the music is composed by my partner in Brain Tongue Finger, Andrew Staniland, and the piece is a 30 poem piece, basically, and it's about the history of AIDS. So I'm going to read a couple of poems from that. This one is called The Great Gale. It's a fairly... The Requiem is a chronological ordering of the history, and this is somewhere near the beginning. I use the idea of the second circle of hell in this piece, and that's why it's called The Great Gale. It is dark. My pupils strain into nothingness. I feel the brushed warmth of another's arm soothe the agonizing ache of wanting. It is wet, too, in this darkness. Slipperiness of flesh, the idea of beauty, a warm hand takes my arm, guides me through the darkness. Eruptions of light begin, a small peripheral flashes, a whisper close to my ear. Pheromonal attraction, the sweet smell, beauty of the whole you. Sticky wickedness as we stumble forward, holding ourselves as a pair. No one else should have you. Needlessly, aimlessly, we move through darkened rooms, blowing like indigent leaves, touch everything we desire. We are drawn by the physicality of sound pounding in the core of us, stealing our breath. My teeth rattle, I feel your skin vibrate. Sweat pours, my hand squeezes your flesh. Dull rush of wind in my ears, we are buffeted by the bodies of others. Shout, we shout out lustily to God, insulting, cajoling, lamenting, as fetid spit speckles our bodies. In this intimate, infernal storm, a roaring in the blood, a single spike, the vortex spins screaming. So, yeah, it gets scarier. Okay, no, don't worry about that. This is called this piece is called Revolubile, and in the piece as a whole, I anthropomorphize quite a lot, and this is an anthropomorphization of the virus itself, and how the virus transcribes its own makeup, the cell makeup, into your own if you are unfortunate enough to have it glommed onto you. So this is imagining the virus as a 1950s motorcycle gay boy, basically. Coated, transparent, sticky, my collar standing against adversity, I seek you out, desired one. You are anti-parallel ribbons of sharp confidence. You are my silly putty Prada model, my Gucci toy, my intact Tom Ford clone, hip and cool, an up-to-the-minute GQ magnifus. I'm your James Dean bad boy, your Rock Hudson slickback, a tinkling Liberace rhinestone predator, your horned-up honey bunny, rolling up my plaid shirt sleeve small and tight on my bicep, the wild one ready for action. When I stick to your black Burberry raincoat, I am yours, melting into you, we integrate. I am of the streets, my story stronger, more aggressive than yours. You listen to my slow transcription, fusion of my style. Soon you sweep your hair back, wear motorcycle leather, unloosen your button collar and slip into denim. You are pliant under my influence, shedding your double helix memory and adopting mine. Together we have 360-degree vision, revolubile, proteinous, contamino. So, don't worry, I'm going to get to the jolly stuff soon. But first, you must suffer. Okay, so I'm intrigued by the idea. For a long time, one of my volunteer jobs was working for the AIDS Committee in the late 80s when AIDS was in its kind of full swing and nobody really knew what was happening. And my job there was as a buddy, and buddies' jobs were to basically advocate for people in hospital or people who are living on their own. And so a couple of times, I had been in hospital rooms with somebody dying and they would see all these visions in the room, but I couldn't see, or what were they seeing? I don't know. But I became very interested in this whole concept, and I'm sure that if you've had experience with death, that has happened. It's not only with people with AIDS, but it's people who are dying often see something, or their brains playing to it. Who knows what it is? But anyway, in this poem, this is the thing I'm trying to put across here. It's called I Groan as One Guilty. And I've taken a lot of the text from the original Requiem, the Mass for the Dead, and used it in different ways in this piece. Not in this piece, but in the whole piece. We are the transparent apricot light filtering through muted windows, the smoky blue hordes in neglected cyclorama corners. We catch in your glance, kaleidoscopic in the crystal edges of your eyes. We have come to ease the way. We perch on windowsills or help ourselves to vinyl chairs. Remember me? I was your classmate, died young. And me, your mother's sister, taken before my time. With celestial voices as sweet as pure light, we'll bring you tales of pastoral fields, the dew not yet dry, of family upon family waiting to take your hand. Our collective breath catches beneath the downy hairs of your arm and releases in a silent bubble cacophony when you bathe. We smooth your blankets with our ice-hot hands. We give succor. Our cool lips press your forehead. It is not time for us to take you, but feel us as tangible filaments in this pale room. We turn our backs when others enter. We ignore your reach, your imploring eyes, your wicked phrase, but we have left our scent hovering. We notice the puzzled look of strangers, a green clarity, blocked recognition of our purpose. We crowd the bed to watch your membraned eyeballs fidget in sleep, join the conversations of the dying to bring you the words of the dead. In this room, whatever is hidden shall be seen.
So, if you want to be really depressed, pencil in June 11th and 12th in your diaries. No, you know, the producer said to me, so what do you want people to take away from this piece? You know, it's like, I don't know, a razor blade to the wrist. But apparently it's an uplifting piece of hope. Okay.
Speaking of the 90s... you were kind of a very prominent in the poetry scene around the 90s in Toronto, and since then, where have you been? It seems like you've been everywhere. You've been sort of all over America. You've been all over the world, kind of.
Yeah. Well, since the 90s, I mean, I'm always doing poetry stuff wherever I go. So I kind of moved away from Toronto for a while, lived in the outskirts doing other stuff, you know, working basically. But I was still running festivals and running events and doing readings and stuff. And then I just got back from the States, and in the States I was also doing reading series as well. So it seems to me I can never actually get away from programming poetry events.
Right.
Yeah.
And now you're back in Toronto for the Illuminato Arts Festival with a libretto for an oratorio about AIDS. One thing that crossed my mind actually is I wonder, did you roll back and sort of look at the Plague Requiem by Diomande Galas? Did that come to mind?
No, actually, I didn't even think of that the entire time I was writing it. But no, it was just something that I've been interested in for a long time, working in the AIDS business, I guess, and just I think it's time to revisit that because there are so many more people now contracting the virus and, you know, engaging in unsafe practices, and I think that we really need to kind of return to a look at the whole history of AIDS and what it really meant in the 80s and 90s. So that's where it came from, really.
Well, yeah, because like AIDS is not necessarily front page right now. Like it's not like it's definitely hurting people, but it's not something that's daily shocking people right now.
No, but there's still, you know, millions of people dying in Africa, and there's a whole resurgence here in the gay population again, and also in disadvantaged people as well. You know, lots of Hispanics, lots of blacks, you know, people who are on the fringes, all contracting it again. Mm-hmm. So the numbers are climbing, and that's something that we have to be aware of, I think.
Right. Now, as a writer, like you were talking about being very very intimate moments with people who are suffering from AIDS, and so like are you how long have you been sort of like trying to write about this for a while, sort of climb inside the experience of other people?
I've always been writing about it, ever since I started doing AIDS work, you know, as a volunteer. I think that, you know, and I spent some time in Africa at missionary stations and with people who had AIDS and grassroots organizations that were working with people with AIDS. So it's never really very far away from, you know, my mind. I think, you know, if Stephen Lewis offered me a job working in Africa doing something with AIDS, I'd go in a second. I mean, I don't know what that would be, you know, as a writer, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. You can look them up. You're in Toronto.
Yeah.
and otherwise, I mean, like the other problems I'm hearing, they seem to come back to sort of meeting people. Like a lot of the time, they were musicians. A lot of the time, jazz musicians, but also meeting artists, or just a lot of the poems were sort of either talking about or speaking to people that you met. It seems like a lot of the poems are about sort of meeting, knowing people.
Yeah, you know, I write a diverse subject matter, I guess, when I'm in poetry. But for some reason, somebody said to me the other day, you know, Do you have any like pastoral poems or like poems about something else? You know, because you seem to be, you know, like a confessional poet. And I guess the thing is that I am actually a confessional poet. You know, it's just what I write about.
But it seems like you're hearing people's confessions. I'm not sure I'm hearing your confessions. I think I'm hearing about what was confessed to you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And we'll finally. So Martha Stewart. What's your attraction to Martha Stewart?
I love Martha Stewart. I love Martha Stewart Living. There's not a magazine that I could pick up that makes me gives me so much pleasure. Mm-hmm. You know, different ways to. I don't know. You know, different uses for Kleenex boxes. You know. That kind of stuff. I love that stuff, you know, and she's just so weird, actually, that I'm kind of obsessed with her.
It seems like the controversy that came up with her being arrested and all just seems to have increased your appreciation.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I can just imagine her in a jail cell, you know, redecorating, getting all the Christmas to wear things.